Welcome to Coder Catch Up. My name is Jamie Jones, and today I'm going to be going over my top 5 tips on migrations you should do after upgrading to Rails 5.2. So as I'm recording this, Rails 5.2 isn't fully released yet. It's currently still in the release candidate stage, but it's pretty much ready to go. So these tips can still be applicable if you're upgrading your application while it's in the RC stage, because it seems quite stable. Basecamp and Shopify are running 5.2 in production now, so that kind of speaks to how ready it really is. Of course, there still could be some kind of little bugs that come in. But these top 5 tips, I highly recommend at least looking at them. Some of them might not be applicable to you depending on your application, what features that you currently use and what features you might use, or things like that. So at least look at them, evaluate to see what they fit. But I think these are 5 kind of areas that you really do need to visit and have a look at. Okay, so tip number 1 is active storage. Now, active storage is basically Rails' new built-in support system for handling files and file uploads, very much like they have with ActiveJob. Now, what this does, basically, it's the modern approach for uploading files straight to the cloud, so things like S3, etc. At the moment, they've got out-of-the-box support for S3, Google Cloud Storage, Microsoft Azure, I can never know how to pronounce that. And basically from there, if you're dealing with images, you can create variants on the fly, which is really nice. So basically that is different sizes on the fly. You don't have to like create them on upload, which is really nice. If you're dealing with videos or PDFs, you can create previews on the fly. And regardless of the type, you can analyze uploads for metadata extraction asynchronously. So this is something I definitely recommend checking out and upgrading. So if you're using CarrierWave, for example, look at moving to active storage, as well as a little bonus here, upgrade to active job as well if you're using something like Sidekick straight without using that, because you're going to get some benefits from the framework itself that's really going to benefit you, and that's really going to depend on your needs and what you're using. But ideally, this is kind of simplifying things, and it then allows you to move independently between these different providers. So with ActiveJob, you could be switching from delayed job to Sidekick, Sidekick to delayed job. For the uploads for active storage, you could look go from S3 to, you know, Google Cloud's format. There's different possibilities there, and you don't really have to change any code. It's just basically some configuration and you're good to go. So it's nice to see that there. Okay, so tip number 2 is looking to update to the new Redis cache store. Now, basically, this allows you to work with your cache in Redis, and it's going to provide a lot of benefits in regards to partial caching or general partial caching and things like that, fragment caching, etc. So basically, this one, I don't think it's going to be a benefit for a lot of people, depending on your application, though, of course. Always it depends. But basically, the Redis cache store takes advantage of Redis to support for automatic eviction when it reaches max memory, allowing it to behave much like a memcache, so a memcache server. And basically, that's going to benefit your speed of the application and speed of information that's returned to the client. So there is a deployment note they do have on it. Redis doesn't expire keys by default, so you have to take care to use dedicated Redis cache server. So don't fill up your persistent Redis server with volatile cache data. So this is coming from the actual Redis cache store notes. So I highly recommend reading into that one to make sure you've got it set up suitable for your environment as well as your application. Okay, so tip number 3 is upgrade to encrypted secrets or encrypted credentials. So basically what's happened now is they've added a config/credentials.yaml.enc, and that file will store production app secrets. Now, this is one that allows you to save these credentials into version control because they are encrypted. So you can only edit them, and see them with a special key, and that it basically won't go into version control. So you can actually keep these in your repo and be good to go. Now, with this key, you have that in config/master.key file, or the Rails_master_key environment variable. So basically, this will then allow you to edit those secrets. This will eventually replace the Rails.applications.secrets. Now, this is one that's it's been great to see that they've moved things into secrets, and they do recommend using environment variables You'll see that in the example file. But it's caused a lot of people to keep those secrets in version control, which keeping any kind of confidential credentials in version control is just a bad idea. So credentials is looking to resolve that for you. So basically, they're saying that those encrypted secrets that were introduced in Rails 5.1. So furthermore, Rails 5.2 opens API underlying credentials, so you can easily deal with other encrypted configurations, keys, and files. Now, I think this is a big ticket item, and I recommend everyone do this, especially if you are using secrets. Maybe you didn't really use them much, but it's certainly one to migrate away from secrets to actually using these encrypted credentials. Tip number four is using the Content Security Policy, or also CSP. So the HTTP Content Security Policy response header allows website administrators to control resources the user agent is allowed to load for a given page. With a few exceptions, policies mostly involve specifying server origins and script endpoints. Basically, this helps guard against cross-site scripting. And from Rails 5.2, it ships with a new DSL that allows you to configure a CSP for your application. You can configure a global default policy and then override it on a per resource basis, and even use lambdas to inject per request values into the header, such as account subdomains in a multi-tenancy application. And you can find out more about this in the Securing Rails Applications Guide, because it is quite in-depth. Now, this is something I really love to see from Hanami, which is another brilliant Ruby framework. I highly recommend checking that out if you have not checked it out yet. The CSP stuff is built in by default, and it's kind of the new way of handling these kind of things. And it's definitely worth checking out to see how you can use that and leverage it to benefit your application and your end users as a result. Tip number five. Now, this one I did touch on my previous video in regards to getting ready to upgrade to Rails 5.2, and that's fixing your deprecation notices. So it's best to keep on top of these as soon as they come up. And this is just going to make sure any future upgrades are going to be less painful for you, because basically when a deprecation notice comes up for some particular API that you're using, some bit of code, it's going to eventually go away. And if you leave it for too long, you do an upgrade and it's actually been removed in that upgrade, then you have some problems and it's going to delay you getting that upgrade completed and then released into production. So it can be a bit of a headache. So it's really important to stay on top of those as much as possible. And you can find them in your production logs, in your development logs, etc. They will come up there, and it's really important to address those as they come up. Okay, so those are my top five tips on what to do after upgrading to Rails 5.2, things you should migrate to, things you should investigate into, and things you should fix straight away. But I'd love to know what your tips are for basically any kind of actions to do after you've upgraded to Rails 5.2 or do during the 5.2 upgrade. I'd love to know. Leave a comment in the comment section below if you're watching this on YouTube. If you are listening in iTunes, you can leave a comment on codacatchup.com for this episode, or you can send me through a tweet to @codacatchup on Twitter, or an email to codacatchup@gmail.com. That's all I really got for this one. If you are enjoying it, please give it a like and subscribe, as well as if you're watching this on YouTube, click on the little bell icon wherever it is on your screen, and you'll be notified as soon as these come out. But other than that, that's all I got for this one. We'll catch the next one. Bye.